Hello and welcome to Oxtalk for Tuesday the 4th of August 2026. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Lisa Bent and Rosemary Shergold, and they have been recorded at home by Pat Kennedy and Rosemary Shergold. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 5:32 a.m. and sunset is at 8:49 p.m. Before the news items, we note a number of events that happened on the 4th of August in history. 1265 saw the Battle of Evesham, one of the two main battles of England's Second Barons' War. It marked the defeat of Simon de Montfort, Earl of Leicester, and the rebellious barons by the future King Edward I, who led the forces of his father, King Henry III. 1873 saw the first clash between Custer and the Sioux. While protecting a railroad survey party in Montana, the U.S. 7th Cavalry, under Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer, clashed for the first time with the Sioux near the Tongue River, killing one man on each side. In 1944, Anne Frank was arrested. Anne Frank was arrested in Amsterdam by German security police following her discovery in a secret annex concealed behind a bookcase in a building where Anne's father Otto worked. There are many theories about how the Frank family were discovered, including betrayal by Nazi collaborators, accidental discovery, and the noting of suspicious activity in the building. In 1962, Nelson Mandela was captured by South African police. He was arrested for conspiring to overthrow the state and sentenced to life imprisonment. Mandela served 27 years in captivity and following his release became President of South Africa, serving from 1994 to 1999. In 1970, Jim Morrison was arrested. The lead singer of the group The Doors was arrested in Los Angeles for indecent exposure, public drunkenness and other offences at a concert earlier that year. Following his trial, Morrison was sentenced to 6 months in prison and given a $500 fine. In 2015, the Muppets Miss Piggy and Kermit the Frog announced the end of their relationship on Twitter. And in 2021, globally known COVID-19 cases surpassed 200 million, with the death toll estimated at 4.2 million, according to Johns Hopkins University. On to births on this day. In 1792, Percy Bysshe Shelley, British romantic poet, probably most famous for the short poems Ozymandias and To a Skylark, and longer works such as Prometheus Unbound, was born in Horsham, Sussex. In 1821, Louis Vuitton, French founder of the Louis Vuitton brand of leather goods, was born in Anchet, France. In 1900, Queen Elizabeth the Queen Mother, British consort of King George VI and titled Queen Mother after his death, was born in Hitchin, Hertfordshire, as Elizabeth Angela Marguerite Beauce-Lyon. In 1944, Richard Belzer, American actor probably best known as Detective John Munch in the American TV show Law and Order Special Victims Unit, was born in Bridgeport, Connecticut. In 1961, Barack Obama, 44th United States President and first African-American President of the U.S., was born in Honolulu, Hawaii. And in 1981, Meghan Markle, American former actress in the TV show Suits, Duchess of Sussex and wife of Prince Harry, was born in Los Angeles, California. And deaths on this day. In 1265, Simon de Montfort, English 6th Earl of Leicester and 1st Earl of Chester, was killed at the Battle of Evesham, aged about 57. De Montfort had led the Second Baronial Rebellion against Henry III and effectively ruled England for about a year before the final battle took place. Also in 1265, Hugh de Spencer, 1st Baron Lady Spencer and Chief Justiciar of England, one of the other leaders of the Baronial Rebellion, was also killed at the Battle of Evesham, aged either 41 or 42. In 1526, Juan Sebastian Elcano, Spanish explorer and navigator who completed the first circumnavigation of the Earth on the Magellan expedition, died of scurvy, aged 39. In 1875, Hans Christian Andersen, Danish author of 150 fairy tales, including The Ugly Duckling, The Little Mermaid, and The Snow Queen, died aged 70 in a country house near Copenhagen called Rolighed, which literally translates as calmness. And in 1962, Marilyn Monroe, American actress most famous for the films Some Like It Hot and The 7-Year Itch, died of an apparent self-inflicted drug overdose at the age of 36. And now on to the news for this week. We hope you enjoy our choice of articles.
Three young winners are set to experience a day in the skies. The national winners of the Brookies Aviation Adventures Writing Competition will take part in a special aviation experience and award ceremony at Kidlington's Oxford Airport. Organised by Brookford Aviation, the competition invited UK children aged 9 to 11 to submit creative works featuring Brookie, the company's mascot, who is half airline captain, half aeroplane. Todd Skaggs, marketing and sales director at Brookford Aviation, said, "Brookie's Aviation Adventures was created to inspire young imaginations while introducing children to the incredible opportunities available within aviation. The response from schools across the UK has exceeded all our expectations, and we are delighted to celebrate our three national winners with an unforgettable day at Oxford Airport. The winners, joined by a parent or guardian, will enjoy a flight in a light aircraft, flight simulator sessions, and behind-the-scenes tours of air traffic control. They'll also visit the airport fire station and aircraft maintenance facilities and have the opportunity to meet aviation professionals. An awards ceremony will take place from 4:30 to 5. Members of the media are invited to attend from 4:15 to meet organisers and capture the trophy presentations. The event will take place on Thursday, July the 30th at 10 o'clock from Oxford Airport."
A month-long nightly road closure has been announced on a key Oxfordshire route. Oxfordshire County Council confirmed the A34 southbound will shut between Pear Tree Roundabout and Marcham Interchange for resurfacing works. The closures will take place nightly from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. starting on August the 3rd and are expected to last until August the 31st. The works will also require the closure of the hard shoulder and lay-by at certain locations. Weekend work is also scheduled. A full ban on through traffic will be in effect during these times, with exceptions for emergency services and those carrying out the works. A theatre company who tour the county's waterways on a narrow boat said they were charmed to perform shows by the Thames. The award-winning Micron Theatre Company brought their unique brand of professional theatre to Wallingford Riverside for two matinee performances. A crowd of around 300 people attended the outdoor shows across the weekends. The company performed legendary cheese theme musical quest Wensleydale Way, followed by a celebration of mobile libraries called Top of the World. Marianne McNamara, Micron's artistic director, said, "We were absolutely charmed by our time at the Wallingford Riverside. The beautiful setting provided the perfect backdrop for our stories, and we were met with delightful audiences who braved the sun with their picnics. We owe a huge debt of gratitude to our marvellous hosts for welcoming us so warmly and making these performances such a success."
Construction work on a major programme to enhance urgent and emergency care at the John Ratcliffe Hospital is underway. Supported by national NHS capital funding, the £11 million Urgent and Emergency Care UEC project is designed to help patients access care more quickly, improve their experience, and ensure people receive the most appropriate treatment for their needs. The development will transform currently unused space on level one of the John Ratcliffe, part of the Oxford University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, OUH, into a range of new facilities that will help patients gain speedier access to the care they need, while supporting staff to work more closely together and reduce delays in treatment. Improving both patient and staff experience has been a key focus throughout the design of the facilities. The project is in the delivery phase, with construction work having started earlier this year. Subject to continued progress, the new facilities are expected to open in phases from spring 2027. A key part of the development is a new 51-bed emergency assessment unit, EAU, for adult patients, with a particular focus on older patients and those with complex needs. The unit will provide short-stay assessment and treatment, helping teams of healthcare professionals provide care more quickly. Working closely with community services, including hospital at home, it is also expected to help reduce patients' length of stay and support more people to receive care closer to home where appropriate. The programme will also create a new urgent treatment centre, UTC, next to the emergency department. The UTC will treat patients with minor illnesses and other conditions that can often be managed outside the emergency department, allowing emergency department teams to focus on those with more serious needs. For children and young people, plans include a dedicated observation area for short-term monitoring outside the paediatric emergency department, as well as new cubicles designed to provide a more appropriate environment for those with mental health concerns. Additional space will be created for same-day emergency care, extended emergency medicine ambulatory care, EEMAC, enabling more adult patients to be assessed, treated, and discharged on the same day without needing to be admitted to hospital. OUH is also committed to investment across the Trust to improve all of its urgent and emergency care services. Felicity Taylor-Drew, Chief Operating Officer, OUH, said, "This project represents a significant investment in the future of urgent and emergency care at the John Radcliffe Hospital. The new facilities will help us reduce delays in care, enhance the experience of patients and staff, and support our teams to deliver high-quality care in the most appropriate setting. We are pleased that work is well underway and looking forward to seeing the benefits to patients and colleagues once it is completed."
A historic new chapter has begun at the county's biggest RAF base. Some 40 military aircraft are now leaving Bryce Norton, while the runway is resurfaced as part of a £180 million upgrade. Planes braced at Bryce are now temporarily operating for other airfields, including Bournemouth Airport and Stansted in Essex. A Bryce Norton spokesman said, "As the station's aircraft disperse to operating locations across the UK, a historic new chapter begins with the start of Operation Mace Vector. The operation sees the clearing of the main station to facilitate essential runway reconstruction and infrastructure improvements without pausing operations." Bryce Norton Station Commander, Group Captain Louise Henton, said, "Watching the final few aircraft depart before the runway works began is a significant moment. RAF Bryce Norton has been at the heart of UK air mobility for generations, and while the station will look different over the coming months, the dedication of our people and the importance of our mission remain unchanged. As my tenure as station commander draws to an end, I am immensely proud to leave the station at the start of such a transformative project, one that will secure Bryce Norton's future as the RAF's principal air mobility hub for years to come. The departure of the aircraft marks the transition from planning to delivery." Commander Air Wing Group Captain Andy McIntyre added, "This successful dispersal of over 40 aircraft to other operating locations without any pause in routine activity is a huge credit to our people and built on thorough planning, coordination and communication. Our aircraft may be temporarily operating elsewhere, but the mission never stops. The Air Mobility Force will continue to deliver under Operation Mace Vector, while we look forward to coming home to start a new chapter at RAF Bryce Norton in a few months." RAF Bryce Norton is indeed the largest station in the Royal Air Force by personnel and operational significance. It houses approximately 5,800 service personnel, 1,200 contractors, and the UK's core air mobility and refuelling fleet. They have now been moved to airports across the UK while work is carried out. Minister for Defence Readiness and Industry Luke Pollard said earlier, RAF Bryce Norton is the backbone of UK air mobility. This £180 million upgrade programme ensures it stays that way. Oxfordshire has welcomed a decision to reinstate the £2 cap on single bus fares. The cap, announced by the Prime Minister, will take effect across England starting on the 1st of January 2027. It follows calls for renewed support from Oxfordshire County Council after the authority raised prices for the My Bus Ticket scheme. Councillor Gareth Epps, Cabinet Member for Transport at Oxfordshire County Council, said, "Following my letter calling for the £2 bus fare cap to be reinstated, I'm delighted that the government has listened and reversed the previous Prime Minister's decision. This will make bus travel more affordable for thousands of people." The previous government decision to raise the cap from £2 to £3 from the 1st of January 2025 led directly to the increased My Bus prices. This change made the My Bus scheme more attractive to passengers, but also increased the financial burden on the council. Oxfordshire's My Bus ticket offers daily and weekly travel across participating operators.
An Oxfordshire violinist is enjoying clearer sound thanks to new hearing technology. Jenny Hellier, 71, from Aynsham, says her music and daily life have been transformed after receiving help and advice from Specsavers in Abingdon. Years of performing in orchestras had damaged her hearing, and she'd been wearing hearing devices since she was 60. Miss Hellier said, "I first noticed I was struggling with my hearing when I was playing the piano. I would also have difficulty following conversations. After becoming frustrated with changes at her audiologist, Miss Hellier visited hearing expert Sid Smith at Specsavers, who helped her choose hearing devices that would work best for her needs. Mr. Smith said, "When Jenny came in to see me, I started with a hearing check, which confirmed a mild to moderate loss in both ears. After listening to her to understand where we might be able to help sharpen her hearing, she tried a pair of hearing devices which weren't quite right, so we switched them for another pair. The new devices are Bluetooth rechargeable digital models that are app-enabled and allow music to be played directly into the ear." Miss Hellier said, "I'm really pleased with how much sharper my hearing is. It's made such a difference. I can just pick up my violin and play, feeling confident that I'm hearing every note clearly." Mr. Smith said it can take between 7 and 10 years for people to do something after they first start to notice a difference, and that hearing loss can leave people feeling lonely and isolated. He encouraged people to make an appointment for a hearing check, which is quick, easy and free.
Oxfordshire living allowance cuts have been approved despite hundreds of people fearing increased financial pressures, social isolation and personal safety impacts. A county council plan, previously described as monstrous by former Lord Mayor John Power, will cut disabled people's living allowances and introduce new charges for means-tested travel and an independent living service. This follows a consultation that found a majority of people felt that the proposed changes would result in an overall negative impact, mainly due to the increased financial pressures, social isolation, and personal safety. Only 9% of those surveyed by the council thought the plans were reasonable. The cuts, approved unanimously by the county council's cabinet, are intended to save £1.8 million a year. The authority currently spends about £302 million a year on its social care system, supporting over 6,800 people. The county's adult social care chief, Rebecca Fletcher, Lib Dem, said, "I don't want to be doing this, but we do have to face the financial reality in front of us and make decisions that protect the long-term sustainability of adult social care for the people who rely on it. As the council attempts to fill a £5.4 million budget gap for 2026-27, she and other cabinet members described the plan as the first of many cuts to come, adding that people who are unable to financially cope with the cuts can apply for individual assessments. The cabinet meeting had heard the experience of Zoe Williams, a member of the Unlimited Oxfordshire Disability Support Group. She said she had applied for an assessment last year after her social contribution rose from £18 to £70. Zoe described the process, saying it cost her 14 weeks, during which time I was paying more than I could afford, 50 emails, 87 receipts, 49 files and multiple phone calls, all while battling through chronic headaches and cognitive difficulties. She added that the purpose of disability benefits is to help meet the additional cost. Zoe explained, requiring people to justify how they spend those benefits raises serious concerns about dignity and the right to independent living. What are the cuts and additional charges? Proposals involve a reduction in allowances for people with disability-related expenses, such as increased heating costs, additional laundry specialist clothing and equipment needs. Social care is not free at the point of service, and the living allowance, known as the disability-related expenditure, are a percentage of benefits for living costs left to people after paying for social care. Currently, people in Oxfordshire are able to keep 35% of their disability benefits, but this will be cut to 25%.
Oxford United winger Ademola Maku says new coach Aaron Ramsey is instilling belief into the squad after a turbulent summer. The Youths have won both of their pre-season fixtures so far after being hit with a transfer embargo earlier in the month. After beating Aldershot Town 3-1, where Maku scored the Yellows' first goal, Oxford came away with a 2-1 win at League Two side Barnet. Former Arsenal and Premier League icon Ramsey replaced former head coach Matt Bloomfield in June before the upcoming League One season. He's held a couple of meetings and he's instilled that belief into us to say what we have at the moment, that's what we're working with, Imaku said after the win at the Hive. We've got more than enough in the dressing room to go and challenge this season. So full belief in the lads and full belief in the staff, and we're all together on this one. He tells us how good we are as a collective. He tells us what we're capable of, what we can do. He's instilled that belief into us. The biggest thing for me is he's been very clear in how he wants to play, in his identity, his values and stuff like that. There's been no confusion, no grey areas. As an individual, he's instilled that confidence in me. The license to just go and attack, go and play with freedom at the top end of the pitch. I'm taking in every word he says. As we know, he's been there and done it all. Everything he's saying, the likes of Chris Gunter and Tom Hutton, everything he's saying, I'm taking it on board. I'm trying to take bits and pieces and add it into my game and see how far I can go this season. When you're not scoring or when you're not assisting, I think you've got to affect the game in some way, whether that's creating for your teammates or getting some shots off and giving the defenders something to think about. I think I've done that well today. Like I said, I like being impactful regardless of whether I'm scoring or not scoring. Imaku arrived at the club from Championship Club Millwall on deadline day of the winter window earlier this year. After taking a bit of time to find his feet, the Irishman began to show promise in the final few fixtures and has made his Republic of Ireland debut since suffering relegation with the Youths. There is hope that the 22-year-old can be an impactful figure in the front line in League One this season.
Oxfordshire is set to see a new lake and a hill with a caving complex built by an outdoor charity activity. West Oxfordshire District Council has approved the Adventure Plus facility on land close to the village of Clanfield by the Windmill Farm Conference Centre. The proposal describes the lake as being for non-motorised sports activities such as kayaking and canoeing, bridge building, paddleboarding and raft building. Plans show a wildlife in island and a bird hide. The hill will feature a caving system and a coast steering wall, and zip wire are also planned. The proposal notes a separate application will be submitted for any other planned field activities beside those included in this current application. Ahead of submitting plans, and as a condition for its change of use, 1,500 trees were planted on the site. A West Oxfordshire planning officer said, "The proposed development would deliver a range of public benefits. These include the provision of a new adventure lake for non-motorised water sports, an outdoor recreation centre, together with new caving, climbing and adventure facilities that would broaden the range of activities available at the established Adventure Plus site."
An Oxford composer has released a new album of organ music. Professor David Moore, a lecturer in music at Christchurch, University of Oxford, has a new album released by the award-winning classical label Resonus Classics. Accende Lumen Sensibus features organist Stephen Farr performing five of Professor Moore's compositions on the Harrison & Harrison organ at Norwich Cathedral. Professor Moore said, "These large-scale works mark a change in my stylistic preoccupation, which had previously focused on developing musical language within miniature forms. Exploration of the French tradition of organ composition has reminded me what a rich resource the organ is compositionally and how well suited it is to sustaining extended forms of musical expression." The album includes three major works from 2007 to 2010 and two newer pieces, with most receiving their premier recordings. Mr. Farr, a leading British concert organist known for championing both established and contemporary music, performs the technically challenging pieces. Professor Moore said, "I've known Stephen for a long time, and when he suggested making a recording of my music, I didn't hesitate to agree. I had complete confidence in him, and that has proved entirely justified. His grasp of the pieces is most impressive." Professor Moore is known internationally for his research in medieval music, as well as music theory and analysis. He is currently working on new compositions, including sketches for an organ concerto. He said, "For me, as for most composers, the future is a matter of unforeseen opportunities and long-term projects that take form little by little."
Network Rail bosses have announced that Botley Road in Oxford will reopen to traffic on Sunday, September the 20th. The reopening of Botley Road had previously been planned for the end of August, following a work programme review in January 2025, which was necessary due to repeated delays. The road was shut at the rail bridge in August 2023 for work linked to a major upgrade of Oxford Rail Station, and was due to reopen on August the 31st this year. Last week, it was announced that the road would not be ready to reopen on August the 31st, and there would be a further delay of 4 to 6 weeks after gas leaks were discovered. There have been repeated delays throughout the project, causing misery for businesses and residents. During recent excavation work relating to drainage for the new road layout, three minor gas leaks were identified on part of the GasNess network owned by SGN. In the interest of safety and to avoid disruptive repair work in the future, Network Rail agreed to accommodate SGN's essential work to replace a section of the GasNess network beneath Botley Road, alongside the completion of the remaining construction work. Since then, Network Rail and SGN have been working closely to integrate their programmes, and SGN's work is expected to finish on Saturday, August the 8th. Network Rail contractors will then complete the remaining work as quickly as possible. Tim Walden, Network Rail Great Western's Route Capital Delivery Director, said, "We know that the continued closure of Botley Road has had a significant impact on residents, businesses and everyone who relies on this route. And I'd like to apologise again for the additional disruption this has caused. While there is still important work to complete, We now have a clear target for reopening the road, and our teams remain focused on delivering the remaining programme safely and reopening Botley Road as soon as possible. The cost of repair work to the Botley Road has risen from £161 million to £237 million, and it is understood that the Western Entrance project has not yet been fully costed. The road was closed at the rail bridge on April 11, 2023, and initially the closure was only expected to last for 12 months, not about 3.5 years. A new rail bridge was installed in February, and a new southern walkway is now open, opening Frideswide Square with Botley Road. A separate announcement could now follow from Network Rail regarding the plans to upgrade Oxford Station, which include a proposal for a new western entrance and a new Platform 5 to boost east-west rail links. Former County Councillor John Howson, who lives near the rail station, said, "Early announcement from Network Rail confirming the date for Botley Road to reopen would be a damp squib, bringing derisive cheers from residents and businesses." Work could start to create a new western entrance for Oxford Station once Botley Road reopens. Work taking place in Botley Road to reroute utility cables and install a new rail bridge took much longer than expected, and as a result, Network Rail bosses ceased work on plans to create a new western entrance and provide a new Platform 5. That work could start early next year, according to Network Rail, in a briefing given to civic leaders in February, when the new rail bridge was being installed. Network Rail's principal programme sponsor, Giles Clark, has said work is expected to begin on the new entrance early next year. He told the New Civil Engineer magazine, "At the moment, the plan for delivering the new Platform 5 and the new western entrance will see works commence in early 2027, with a view to it being in place, ready for when the east-west rail and the Cowley branch line need it, in probably December 2030. When it emerged earlier this year that the work to create a new western entrance and provide a new platform had not yet been costed, former County Councillor John Howson said residents felt betrayed.
A ballet school has swapped chairs for professional training equipment thanks to a community donation. Aspire Dance Academy in Oxfordshire has received proper ballet bars thanks to a donation from Dorchester Living, the house builder behind a nearby housing development. The academy teaches Royal Academy of Dance, RAD, Ballet and Tap, to around 100 children each week across Hayford Park and surrounding villages. Students previously relied on chairs during practice. Emma Elliott, who runs Aspire Dance Academy, said, "We are so grateful to Dorchester Living for supplying these bars. This donation makes a big difference to my pupils. The portable bars can be dismantled and stored between sessions, making them a practical solution for the academy's needs." Paul Silver, Chief Executive of Dorchester Living, said, "We're delighted to have been able to help Emma and her pupil with the bars. It's wonderful to see the impact the Aspire classes have on children across the community, bringing the joy of ballet and tap to so many." Aspire Dance Academy has served the community since 2008.
The city's derelict Jericho Wharf site has been sold to an Oxford University college with promises to finally develop the site. Worcester College has completed the purchase of the canal side and former boatyard from Hong Kong-based Cheer Team for an undisclosed price. The 18th century wharf has essentially been left abandoned since the early 1900s, with various plans to develop it never coming to fruition. Jericho Wharf's sale was confirmed this week by the Walton Street Institution. This acquisition marks the beginning of a new exciting chapter for an important historic site that has remained largely unused for almost two decades, the college said in a statement. The college is committed to bringing the site back into productive use through a carefully considered redevelopment that respects its heritage and contributes positively to the local area. we recognise the strong interest that local residents and other stakeholders have shown in the future of the site. Over the coming months, we will be engaging with the community and other interested parties as we develop proposals that seek to meet both the college's long-standing needs and the aspirations of the wider neighbourhood. The Jericho Wharf Trust, the body representing local groups campaigning for a community-led development, says it is delighted by the sale. Trustee David Edwards said, "For the first time since 2013, when the derelict boatyard site was bought by Cheer Team, there's a real hope it will be developed in the joint interests of its owner and of the people of Jericho." During the 13 years of its ownership by Cheer Team, the site became progressively more derelict, the Trust said. A catalogue of planning applications, appeals, permissions, and then failure to build once permission was granted showed a lack of commitment from Cheer Team, it said. Indeed, planning permission for a mixed-use residential and community development, including homes, a boatyard, community centre and piazza, collapsed in February this year, 2 years after it was given at appeal. In December 2024, the Jericho Wharf Trust began to campaign for Oxford City Council to claim the site by compulsory purchase order. By March this year, Cabinet Member for Asset Management, Ed Turner, declared that our patience is at an end with the lack of progress. Mr. Turner said that he's perfectly happy about the sale, adding, "It has been stuck with nothing happening for far too long. And as you may know, we threatened a compulsory purchase order because the situation and lack of movement was completely unacceptable. Jericho Wharf Trust vowed to work with the college to bring forward proposals for the redevelopment of the site. This is expected to be a new community centre, boatyard and public square with provision for a new canal crossing. We will be initiating a process of community consultation," the Trust said in a statement. "The people of Jericho and of Oxford as a whole, having lived so long with promises and retractions over the site, need an opportunity to express their views." Oxfordshire is now officially in a drought, the Environment Agency has declared. Seven areas of England are now in a drought after a hot, dry summer with low rainfall. As well as the Thames Valley counties, East Anglia, Hertfordshire, the whole of London, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight are all in drought in the south east. Devon, Cornwall and the West Midlands and Wessex have also been hit. There have now been three droughts in the past 5 years, including 1922, 2025 and 2026. This comes after back-to-back record-breaking heat waves, with temperatures expected to rocket into the mid-30s again soon. Helen Wakeham, Director of Water at the Environment Agency and Chairwoman of the National Drought Group, said, "The hot and dry weather means we are currently using water faster than nature can replenish it. A second consecutive summer drought is an exceptionally serious situation and one that will have long-lasting impacts on our environment, wildlife and the economy. We want everyone to stay safe and hydrated during the hot weather, but every drop we save is a drop more for nature and agriculture."
West Oxfordshire District Council has launched a £555,000 Community Services Investment Fund. The three-year programme aims to support voluntary and community groups working on projects that improve community wellbeing, support nature recovery and strengthen climate resilience. Sandra Coleman, Executive Member for Stronger Healthy Communities at West Oxfordshire District Council, said, "By providing longer-term funding, we're giving organisations greater confidence to plan ahead, develop their services and continue making a real difference to residents. We encourage both new applicants and existing grant recipients to apply, and we look forward to supporting projects that will benefit our West Oxfordshire communities for years to come." The new fund follows the Council's first three-year service level agreement programme, which launched in 2024 and committed more than £500,000 to seven organisations, delivering eight programmes of work across West Oxfordshire. It is designed to give stability to organisations ahead of local government reorganisation, while supporting the Council's goals of legacy, excellence and innovation. Grants will be available to large-scale eligible voluntary and community organisations, registered and accepted charities, community interest companies and independent statutory bodies in appropriate circumstances. Funding will begin in April 2027 and applications will open on Monday, July the 20th, 2026. The deadline to apply is 5 o'clock on Wednesday, the 16th of October, 2026.
The deployment of police live facial recognition cameras in Bicester and Oxford led to 3 arrests earlier this year. The camera vans came to Bicester Town Centre and Central Oxford on May the 19th and 29th, respectively. Data released by Thames Valley Police showed that a total of 69,929 faces were captured and a total of 7,521 people were spotted who were on the police watch list during an average of 3 hours at the 2 Oxfordshire spots. In Bicester, there were 3 true alerts confirmed and 3 arrests, but the day seemed to run smoothly, with no alerts, arrests or disposals, and in the famous University City. A live CCTV feed captures facial images before they are input into the system. Oxfordshire police officers have found almost £20 million worth of cocaine hidden in bananas. The seizure of 240 kilograms of the Class A drug was made on Wednesday, July the 22nd, by Border Force officers supporting the National Crime Agency, Thames Valley Police and Hampshire Police. A refrigerated cargo ship, MV Atlantic Clipper, docked in Portsmouth, having set sail from South America via the Caribbean. The drugs, which have a street value of £19.2 million, were hidden in crates of bananas. Following their discovery, the drugs were moved to a secure location. Matteo Soul, the National Crime Agency senior investigating officer, said, "This is a significant seizure of cocaine and will deprive the organised crime group behind it a profit that cannot now fund further offending."
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
An innovation centre welcomes sixth form students for a glimpse into the world of entrepreneurship. The newly launched Open Day was held by Oxford's Grassroots Innovation Centre at Keble College in partnership with Chenderit School, the Oxford Academy and the Swan School. Lower Six Business Studies students took part in workshops, founder talks and careers advice sessions throughout the day. Rob Nicol, Innovation Director at Grassroots Innovation Centre, said, "At Grassroots Innovation Centre, we're committed to helping innovators turn ideas into successful businesses. We also believe it's important to inspire the next generation. Our aim for the open day was to bring business theory to life and to show students that entrepreneurship is an achievable career path, not something reserved for a select few. By bringing students into a working innovation centre and introducing them to founders who are building businesses every day, we're helping them connect what they learn in the classroom with opportunities that exist beyond school. We hope this is the first of many events that strengthen the links between Oxford's innovation community and local schools. Students were taken through the practicalities of launching and growing a business, from structuring a company and developing a product to attracting customers and making sales. A standout moment was the chance to hear from entrepreneurs based at the centre. Catherine Hurley Arbibe, co-founder of New Road 30, and Jeremy Bassett, founder of Super Benji, shared their personal journeys in building businesses in healthcare innovation and AI sales. The sixth formers asked questions about identifying unique selling points, learning from failure, and finding the confidence to take risks. The programme also featured an employability workshop led by Zoe Greenwood of Oxford HR. Students were given advice on writing CVs and cover letters, using artificial intelligence effectively, and ensuring their applications reflected their skills, values, and personality. An interactive session on sales brought the day to a close, emphasising the importance of communicating confidently in all areas of life, from pitching ideas and seeking investment to progressing in a chosen career. Lauren McGaw, head of sixth form at the Swan School, said, "The students really enjoyed the event and the opportunity to understand theoretical business concepts in the real world with real business examples. Almost all are now considering establishing their own enterprises." Grassroots Innovation Centre plans to make the Sixth Form Business Open Day an annual part of its outreach, aiming to build lasting connections between schools and Oxford's growing innovation ecosystem.
Firefighters were handed ice lollies by a well-wisher as they tackled an industrial fire earlier this week. A blaze broke out on an industrial estate in Goring Heath. Up to 85 firefighters and emergency personnel responded from Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service, Royal Berkshire Fire and Rescue Service, supported by Thames Valley Police and South Central Ambulance Service. Goring Fire Station thanked a member of the Woodcote community for bringing ice lollies to the fire crews who worked to extinguish the blaze. On a Facebook post it said, "Thanks so much to a member of the Woodcote community who very kindly brought ice lollies down to the fire crews who are working round the clock. The fire burnt out buildings, vehicles, pallets and vegetation on the site before spreading into a nearby tree line and surrounding fields. The presence of flammable gas cylinders, some of which exploded during the early stages of the incident, meant firefighters had to work carefully to contain the blaze while keeping the crews safe. The response was scaled back to 6 appliances during the early evening, as crews remained on site overnight to damp down hotspots. 2 crews remained on site, while Long Toll Road off the B4526 in Goring remained closed to support ongoing operations. A fire investigation is now underway." A spokesperson for Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue said, "The cause of the fire is currently unknown and a fire investigation is underway. We would like to thank residents and members of the public for their patience and cooperation while emergency services dealt with this incident." Maggie Philippova Rivers, Liberal Democrat, Oxfordshire County Council for Goring, shared an update. She said, "The combination of high winds, high temperatures and exceptionally dry conditions make the fire particularly challenging, with crews working to prevent it from spreading beyond the site." She also thanked emergency services. She said, "My thanks go to all of the firefighters and the emergency service personnel who responded so quickly and worked in extremely difficult conditions to protect nearby properties, businesses and the surrounding countryside. My thoughts are also with the business owners affected by the fire, who now face the difficult task of recovering from this incident. She added, "This is one of several large fires attended by Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service during the recent spell of hot, dry weather. It is a timely reminder of the increased fire risk, and I would encourage everyone to take extra care when enjoying the countryside by avoiding open flames, disposing of cigarettes safely, and reporting any signs of fire immediately." A vet has warned that pets can also suffer from car sickness. The reminder from Headington-based Beaumont Veterinary Group comes as families across the UK prepare for summer holidays. Dog owners are being advised to keep an eye out for travel sickness in their pets. Hannah Gardner, head vet at Beaumont Veterinary Group, said, "These signs are often mistaken for excitement or nervous energy, but in many cases they're actually early warning signs that a dog is experiencing motion sickness. If left unmanaged, travel sickness can worsen over time, with some dogs becoming increasingly reluctant to travel altogether." Ms. Gardner explained that while most people associate car sickness with vomiting, dogs often show subtle signs of discomfort. These signs can include licking their lips, excessive yawning, panting, or restlessness during journeys. Other indications of travel sickness can include drooling, whining, vocalising, refusing to get into the car, or appearing withdrawn. Beaumont Veterinary Group recommends starting with short journeys to help dogs adjust to car travel, including good ventilation, avoiding large meals before trips, and bringing familiar bedding or toys for comfort. Ms. Gardner says there are effective treatments available, so if your dog shows signs of travel sickness, it's always worth speaking to your vet.
People are being encouraged to get tested for hepatitis B and hepatitis C as part of World Hepatitis Day. Specialists at Oxford University Hospitals, OUH, are raising awareness of hepatitis B and C ahead of World Hepatitis Day. Both infections can remain undetected for years, often without symptoms, but can lead to serious liver disease, liver scarring, and liver cancer if left untreated. Lizzie Sims, hepatology community nurse at OUH, said, "Many people with hepatitis B or hepatitis C don't realise they have the infection because there are often no symptoms in the early stages. It can be silent until they present with late disease. Testing is simple and early diagnosis can make a huge difference. Effective treatments are available to control hepatitis B infection, and for hepatitis C, many patients can be cured. Globally, around 287 million people are living with hepatitis B or C, with more than 1.3 million deaths each year. In Oxfordshire, almost 400 people are currently receiving treatment for hepatitis B. Some 187 people across the Thames Valley were treated for hepatitis C during 2025-26, according to specialists.
Aaron Ramsey says Oxford United cannot let uncertainty affect them after a chaotic summer transfer window. The U's maintain their perfect record in pre-season with another 3-1 win on Tuesday, this time against Crawley Town in front of a home crowd at the Kasam. An own goal from Charlie Barker opened the scoring after 11 minutes before former Yellows loanee Malcolm Eboué equalised with a free kick. Gatlin Odonka restored United's lead with his third goal in as many games before a late strike from Tyler Goodrum sealed the team's third pre-season victory. Oxford staved off some decent Crawley chances in the first half, Stephen Duke McKenna looking particularly threatening for the visitors with two close efforts. In the second period, Ramsey's men asserted their dominance, taking the lead and almost adding a fourth or even fifth goal with further opportunities from Goodrum and a post-hitting shot from fellow substitute Mark Harris. The Yellows are beginning to play some forward-thinking, neat football as they adjust to life under their new boss. "This is all new to them," the 35-year-old stated. "Don't forget, We've only introduced this sort of way of playing and these ideas to the boys 4 weeks ago. So this is all fresh. It's not going to be perfect. I'm fully aware of that, and that was evident today in certain parts of the game. But what I do know is that everybody's buying into it, and then when we do produce moments of really top play like the goal, then that's only encouraging for us. And we can only have that to build and work on and do that more consistently through the game. I'm really pleased with where we're at the moment. But look, we have to have our expectations as well. We are realistic. Former Arsenal midfielder and Oxford head coach Ramsey also touched on player uncertainty after the win, with the club under a temporary transfer embargo and aiming to keep hold of their squad during the remainder of the summer window. It's going to be us that are going to get out of this. It's important for us now to really stick together in these times. Yes, there's uncertainty around, but we can't let that affect us. It's all about what's in that dressing room, and we need to protect that at all costs. I think everybody's bought into it, and I'm really encouraged by what they've done so far and what they've seen. This will help again to reinforce them. I'm just pleased that we got asked a few questions in the first half, but the way we responded as well shows that we can adapt. A new start date for the Oxford traffic filter scheme and end of the congestion charge will not be revealed without absolute certainty about Botley Road's reopening. The key city access route closed in April 2023 for an anticipated 12 months at that time as part of Oxford's railway station improvement scheme. After repeated delays and uncertainty about when it would reopen, Network Rail has announced that the road will reopen on September the 20th. The traffic filters, originally approved in 2026 and held up by the initial closure, were set to replace the congestion charge on September the 14th, but have been postponed again by repeated delays. County Transport boss Gareth Epps said, "Residents and businesses have endured the closure of Botley Road for far too long, so we welcome the clarity on reopening. We will now consider our programme for the traffic filter trial and will announce the start date at the earliest opportunity once we have absolute certainty." Last week, Network Rail said the road would reopen 4 to 6 weeks after the end of August, a different timescale to what has now been revealed. The most recent delay has come because of gas leaks found during excavation work. The rail operator said, "In the interest of safety and to avoid disruptive and unplanned repair work in the future, Network Rail agreed to accommodate Southern Gas Network's essential works to replace a section of the gas network beneath Botley Road, alongside the completion of the remaining construction work." While a new date has not been revealed for the traffic filters to start, the County Council shared details of the scheme when it announced the previous anticipated start date. The incoming 18-month filter trial is similar to the congestion charge scheme in many ways, with the same time constrictions, locations and cameras used to enforce it, but the option to purchase a £5 permit will be removed. The number plate recognition cameras will remain and operate on Hythebridge Street, St Cross Road, St Clement Street and Thames Street every day from 7am to 7pm, as well as Marston Ferry Road and Holloway Monday to Saturday from 7 to 9 and 3 to 6. Passing them without a permit will result in a £70 fine, which can be reduced to £35 if paid within 21 days, or increased to £105 if it's not paid within 28 days. 2 weeks after that, the council can pass it on to the Northampton County Court, which can escalate the situation to a bailiff. In the first 6 months of filters, a driver passing a camera without a permit will read a first offence warning letter. If they pass the filters again, they will be fined.
Plans to remove North Oxford phone boxes and replace them with a 3-metre-tall obtrusive and unthoughtful BT street hub have been refused. A proposal to replace summertime payphones described how an eliminated advertising screen on Banbury Road could offer free calls and Wi-Fi taking on future technologies such as air quality monitoring, emergency messaging, 4G, 5G mobile coverage. A city council planning officer recognised these benefits, but also described harm which could have been caused by the scheme. Recommending the refusal of the hub, a city council planning officer noted obtrusive designs and unthoughtful sighting of signs and advertisements can have a detrimental effect on visual amenity or on the character of an area. The proposed hub would have a very substantial height of 3 metres and would appear particularly prominent and incongruous because of its sighting. They would not be attached to a structure, and nor would the advert necessarily relate to any of the surrounding businesses. The advertisements would be a very significant and dominant addition to the street scene. The impact of the proposed advertisements on amenity would be exacerbated by the proposed illumination, which would make their appearance more prominent. Their report said the council believes the existing kiosks are already tall at 2.51 metres and already have a negative impact on the area, with advertisements displayed on the sides of the boxes, and serves to prove the harmful impact that such structures can have. The officer added, it is considered that the proposed BT street hub, due to its scale at almost 3 metres in height and position on the public footpath, would introduce not just street clutter, but also an incongruous addition to the street scene and character of the surrounding area. Crime and clutter concerns led to street hubs being refused planning permission from several councils between 2018 and May of this year, including Bristol City, Brighton and Hove and Middlesbrough. BT street hubs have faced controversy, with police reports of them being a persistent nuisance linked to incidents of violence, drug use and antisocial behaviour. In BT's application to Oxford City Council, it said a small number of locations drew attention to local drug issues. This involved misuse of free call services, but it has since invested significantly in developing call restriction capabilities. Thames Valley Police have not objected to the plans, subject to a condition that the hub would have the ongoing use algorithm to identify repeated antisocial number use, with a review after the first 3 months of installation between police and BT to assess any issues arising. It said if this was done, the plan would not be likely to cause unacceptable harm to public safety and accessibility.
Billionaire is set to convert a former city hospital chapel into a top-class restaurant. The City Council has approved plans by Ellison Oxford Limited, a company founded and backed by one of the world's richest men, Larry Ellison, to turn the former chapel and hospital superintendent's accommodation at the Littlemore Hospital site into what has been described as a culinary destination. The eatery would be called the Chapel and Lodge. Ellison Oxford is currently building the Ellison Institute of Technology, a science and innovation campus at Oxford Science Park, and is revamping the city centre pub, the Eagle and Child. The restaurant plans will transform part of the original hospital site, one of the first mental health institutions built in the country. The spaces are currently used as offices for Lang O'Rourke, who are building the Ellison Institute. The plans describe the lodge as an understated building that has undergone numerous cosmetic alterations since 1882, and the chapel as subject to a range of 20th century interventions that have resulted in a series of mediocre office environments. There are modern extension demolitions included in the proposals, which will see both buildings refurbished and a new conservatory and internet connecting walkway enclosed. A City Council planning officer said, the proposal's retention of the chapel and lodge buildings while stripping away the more recent unsympathetic additions and alterations is commendable. The proposal would re-establish the relationship between historic buildings with considered additions and reinstatement of an interconnecting walkway between the two. The proposal says there will be capacity for 150 guests at both buildings and car parking spaces will be reduced from 42 to 24. When plans were submitted, Councillor David Henwood, who represents Littlemore on the County Council, said he was pleased the area would get a new restaurant and he hoped it would be both affordable and accessible to the local community. He added, "The proposal for a publicly accessible ground floor operating from morning to evening with a focus on seasonal lunches is particularly positive. However, Littlemore is an area of high deprivation and it's essential that the Institute gives careful consideration to both accessibility and affordability so that local residents can genuinely benefit from the development." Arrival to Jeremy Clarkson's pub, The Farmer's Dog, has opened its doors. Nigel Bailey and his wife Rachel, who live in Brize-Norton, became the new owners of the former Horse and Radish in Minster Lovell earlier this year. The tavern was on the market for £850,000 last summer, though that fell to £650,000 late in 2025. Now the pub has reopened under the name of The Fire Sprite Pub and Grill, with the owners describing it as rooted in the Cotswolds, inspired by Texas. Rachel Minton Bailey spent time in Texas as a child and was inspired by the abundant fireflies in the state, saying her grandmother would call them fire sprites. Meanwhile, she says her husband has always dreamt of owning a pub. The new owners promise slow-cooked meats, hearty pub classics, flame-grilled favourites, being served in a warm, welcoming setting where families, friends, walkers and locals can gather together. The pub, which was fully booked during its opening weekend, also has shepherd's huts for visitors to stay overnight. Mr. Bailey confirmed they would give the pub a new name and said it would be based on English literature. Boasting 2.92 acres of Cotswold views, the pub is less than 2 miles away from Jeremy Clarkson's hostelry, The Farmer's Dog in Asthall. Mr. Bailey said he expects the upgraded Horse and Radish to complement the former Top Gear Man's Boozer, as well as the White Hart in Burford. The pub has already drawn attention for the owner's use of AI in creating the new sign and for the complete renovation of the historic building. It dates back more than 100 years to 1871, when it was first mentioned in the census with the name The New Inn. Over the years, the new inn had several transfers of ownership, with tenancies lasting on average 2 years. It continued to be called the new inn into the 21st century. Then it reopened in May 2006 after a major refurbishment, which included an extra single storey being built to the pub at the rear and side. In 2013, the pub was renamed the Dovecote, before being rebranded again as the Horse and Radish. The pub comes with planning permission for 8 shepherd's huts in the adjacent wild paddock, granted in 2022, and according to the land registry, was last sold for £465,000 in September 2017. Inside the pub is a 3-section trading area with multiple entrances, a raised bar section with 22 seats, leading to 3 sets of customer toilets, a central bar servery section split either side of a featured fireplace, and a larger dining area suitable for 46 people at the back.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, we now have a new landline number for you to call. The number is 01865 377 635. That's 01865 377 635. Please leave a message for Michelle, our listener coordinator. Alternatively, you can call Margaret on 074 96 06 2280. That's 074 96 06 2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message, or you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspapers skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.